The Freeman Report and James Freeman on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Hello and welcome to today's show. It is Thursday, the 16th of May. I'm your host, James Freeman, and I've got a packed 2 hours lined up for you on today's Freeman Report. First up, I'll be asking former Brexit Party MEP, a colleague of mine in the European Union, a former colleague and deputy leader of the Reform Party in the UK, Ben Habib. I'll be asking him why a High Court judge has ruled that the British government's Rwanda policy should not apply to Northern Ireland. Some on the left are predictably blaming Brexit, as they always do. But is this really the case? What does this ruling mean for the British government's flagship policy to solve illegal migration? And what about that policy? Does it actually have any chance of working at all? And if not, how should the government go about tackling illegal migration? Then in the second part of this hour, I'll be speaking with author and philosopher Dr. Martin Cohen about the world's post-war order. And if those rules still apply, I don't think they do, to be honest, but I'll be asking Dr. Cohen if they do. I'll also be asking him what rules we're currently living under, if any, and if that world order is now dead and buried. I'll also be asking him what an ethical foreign policy would look like, and if it is possible for a small country with a big global reach like the UK to implement an ethical foreign policy without alienating all of its allies. So, the cornerstone of Rishi Sunak's deterrent to stop the boats will not apply to Northern Ireland as things stand. The judge in the case ruled that it undermines human rights protections that are guaranteed in the region under post-Brexit arrangements. The judge also ruled that parts of the policy are incompatible with the European Convention on Human Rights, aka the ECHR. Now, if this ruling stands, and it is indeed because of post-Brexit arrangements, if it is because of that, then Rishi Sunak, the British Prime Minister, only has himself to blame, because he negotiated these arrangements and signed the agreement on the 27th of February, 2023, the so-called Windsor Framework. Northern Ireland's Democratic Unionist Party say Downing Street ignored its warnings about the legislation at the time when they claimed it would act as a magnet for asylum seekers. The party's interim leader, Gavin Robinson, said it is imperative that immigration policy applies equally to every part of the UK. I must admit, I have to agree with him on that. Now, the irony of all of this is that recent polls from Ireland show that 50% of the Irish population now want to see checkpoints at the border between Northern Ireland and Ireland after the Irish government said that most asylum seekers are going to Ireland, make their way to the country from England via Northern Ireland, which is ironic, isn't it? Because France, an EU country, clearly thinks it's fine for illegals to make their way from France to the UK because they're doing sod all to stop it happening. But it's not okay for them then to make their way to Ireland, back to another EU country. It's also ironic because during the Brexit negotiations, the border between Ireland and Northern Ireland was weaponized to ensure that Northern Ireland was effectively kept within the EU on many aspects of law. But now that law means Ireland cannot protect itself from migrants making their way from England to Northern Ireland and then on to Ireland. It is also interesting that it was the Good Friday Agreement that was used to weaponize the border issue, with EU politicians saying that a border would cause Republicans to restart the Troubles. And yet now we see Sinn Féin, those very same Republicans, supporting and encouraging mass migration to Ireland. So the whole thing is a big fat mess. And in my opinion, it is supposed to be a mess, as it allows migrants to freely move throughout Europe. which of course is part of the plan which many are calling the Great Replacement. And in the past few days, the EU Council has voted to implement a new migration and asylum policy that will force EU states to take their share of migrants or pay 20,000 euros per migrant if they refuse. Romania, the Czech Republic, Slovakia and Hungary voted against accepting mandatory quotas, while Poland surprisingly voted for them, despite the people of Poland being against the policy. Now, the timing of the vote is interesting as it was held just 1 month before June's EU elections. So I wonder what impact this new policy will have on those elections. Not that it really matters, though, because MEPs and the EU Parliament is just a facade anyway to give the illusion of democracy. The EU Parliament cannot propose legislation, nor can it repeal existing laws. No, the Parliament's purpose is to rubber stamp legislation that the Commission puts forward after agreeing that legislation behind closed doors with powerful lobbies and vested interests. So instead of fixing the problem of illegal migration by strengthening borders and stopping people coming to the EU, what the EU has done is set up a system to manage the people coming. A system that will officially reallocate migrants to countries across the EU, and it seems that the British Labour Party will participate in the scheme if it forms the next British government. Although to date, the party has refused to say how many migrants it would agree to take. If you want to get in touch about anything to do with the show, then please email me at jamesfreeman@tntradio.live. And if you want to join in the conversation, get yourself over to tntradio.live right now and click on the chat icon. My name is James Freeman, and this is the Freeman Report, today's news talk, TNT.
Russia, gas prices, COVID mandates.
It just doesn't seem like anybody's doing anything about it.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Right, now before we go over to Ben Habib, we're going to go over to our news correspondent, Gemma Cooper, for today's breaking news. Hello, Gemma.
Hello there. Well, it's funny that Ben Habib should be your first guest because Nigel Farage has been talking about the Reform Party this morning. He's obviously the honorary president, and it's following on for Sir Jacob Rees-Mogg's invitation yesterday for the Conservatives to merge with Reform and unite the right to win the general election later in the year. Today, Nigel Farage has come out and said there's no way the Conservatives would win the election, even if they did unite with Reform, because of the public's anger towards the Conservative Party on their record on immigration and the failings there. So interesting, maybe Ben will like to elaborate on some of those points, because his was one of the names mentioned to be selected for Tory party candidateship and stand to get the party more votes. But Nigel Farage said wouldn't make any difference anyway. They're on a losing streak. Got an update for you on the water story that we covered yesterday. Residents in South Devon on the south coast of England suffering from an outbreak of cryptosporidium in the water supply. It's still going on. It could last up to 10 days, even 2 weeks. Residents being told to boil their water, tap water for everything from brushing their teeth, certainly for drinking. Experts are warning there'll be more cases of cryptosporidiosis. People have ingested this bacteria because it can take up to 10 days after taking the bacteria, ingesting the bacteria in the water before you can fall ill. The water company said they're tracing it back to a reservoir. They've upped compensation. Schools are closed. Many B&Bs have suffered cancellation. So that's an update for that story there. And talking of falling ill, it's emerged in the last few hours. There's been a mass poisoning at a prison in the UK, at Swaledale in Kent. 25 prison officers were taken ill after inmates allegedly spiked the curry in the staff canteen with the zombie drug spice. Three prison officers were taken to hospital. Investigations need to be urgently carried out. It happened last week, but the story is just broken now as details have been leaked. So very embarrassing there for His Majesty's Prison and Probation Service.
And Gemma, if this water contamination, is there anything you can do if you think you've drunk the water? Are they giving any advice, or are they just like COVID saying, well, you know, it takes 10 days to come on, you just have to sit and wait and then come to us if you get ill? Is there anything people can do?
There's not really anything you can do once it's in your system. It causes diarrhea-like symptoms. Dehydration is obviously the risk there. The bottled water has been handed out by the water company. They say there was no indication that cryptosporidium was in the supply once it left their treatment centre, but they are investigating a reservoir. Hillhead is the name of the reservoir and surrounding areas to see how the cryptosporidium got into the water supply. But once it's in you, it's in you. It's a bit like getting norovirus, which is also a hideous virus, similar symptoms. You have to wait for it to take its course. It can make you very ill. Children in the immunocompromised are at worse risk, as us if you're frail and elderly. It can take a while to leave your system completely. It's a nasty bug, but really once you've ingested it, there's very little you can do except keep yourself hydrated and rest.
Oh, that sounds terrible. I hope nobody comes down with it. And on this story with Nigel Farage, I saw a post from him on Facebook a few days back, basically sharing a pollster's prediction that if Nigel Farage was to stand in the general election with Reform, it would totally wipe out the Tory party. And he led that post with a question, should I do it? Has there been any talk about whether he will stand in the general election?
Not that I've seen just yet, but isn't it interesting saying it, even if the Conservatives united with us, the public wouldn't buy it. The public wouldn't buy it. So is he gauging the public mood better? I mean, Richard Tice yesterday, the leader of Reform, he was saying that the Conservative Party are using Reform's policies, especially on immigration, as a crib sheet for deciding what they should and shouldn't say to the public in the run-up to the election. Seems like he's alleging and inferring really there that the Tories have completely lost their way and have not got their finger on the pulse of public opinion at all and copying other parties, new parties.
Yeah.
What it'd be interesting to hear what Ben Habib has to say with relation to this. I know he's on to talk about other things, but this is quite an interesting little political. I mean, I thought Jacob Rees-Mogg yesterday looked rather desperate, you know, please join us, please be our friend. And it's not going to happen. So it's one to watch with interest. It's the pantomime of politics. And everybody started to electioneer a little bit. I mean, Keir Starmer today's launched his plan for Britain, saying he's no Blair. It's all different now, which means he is Blair and it's no different now. That's what that means. It's a game to watch with interest, isn't it?
Yeah, and it was really funny, you know, during in the run-up to the 2019 general election, which the Brexit Party obviously stood in, it was really interesting because the Conservatives, what they do is they'll look at the policies which people are voting for Reform or Brexit Party at the time, and then they start stealing them to try and mitigate the risk. But the other really funny thing we noticed, and we did track this, is their deep blue Conservative colour started turning more and more lighter blue, like Reform or Brexit Party, sorry, at the time. It was quite noticeable to us in the party, their podiums, their blue got much more similar to the Brexit Party. But anyway, putting that aside, I think it's the right decision not to even consider having any talks with the Tories, because they are quite a devious bunch. They're backstabbers. We learned that in the 2019 general election when Brexit Party MEPs were negotiating with the Tories, and they just used those talks basically to learn information to then stab us in the back. So they really are not a very nice bunch, the Conservatives. So I think it's the right decision. But I will be asking Ben about that in a moment after the next break. So thank you for that, Gemma. Look forward to speaking with you in the second hour of the show. Right then, Ben Habib, we're going to be speaking with him right after this short break. I'm going to put all of this to Ben. So don't go anywhere. Stay right where you are, right here on TNT.
TNT's Alex Zaharoff-Roy.
We also have a new smartphone from Google, the Pixel 8a. Reviews are not able to be shared yet, but it has most of the features of the Pixel 8 at a sort of a similar price in the States. I mean, in Australia, it's a couple of $100 difference, but it does have all of that AI goodness that Google has been sharing, the tap at the bottom where the white line is at the bottom of the screen, and you can see the screen shimmer, and then you can do a circle to search. So you see something on the screen, someone's got a pair of sneakers or there's a computer, something there, you can draw a circle around it, and then Google will show that to you. It's got other features inside where you can summarize information that you've recorded to a voice recorder. And their big developer conference is also on next week, called Google I/O. So Apple in a month, Google next week. There'll be a preview of Android 15 and lots of AI things that we're yet to see.
Talking Tech with Alex Zaharoff-Reut on today's News Talk TNT. TNT is an independent global news talk station that does what others only say they do. TNT is a live radio and TV broadcaster that simply tells the truth 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. No one in the world does what we do, crisscrossing the globe, providing credible news and opinion all day and all night. In 2.5 years, TNT has become a credible and exciting platform with brilliant hosts and staff. It's a critical time, and we must continue to call out the misinformation and propaganda from mainstream media and their powerful sponsors. We're now appealing to our many friends and supporters around the world to go to tntradio.live and make a small donation to TNT while we seek the right investors to continue our important mission.
Ladies and gentlemen,
today's news talk.
News and information.
TNT Radio.
Right, well, I'm delighted to be welcoming back my former colleague at the Brexit Party. He is, of course, a former MEP like myself. He's now deputy leader of the Reform Party. Welcome back to the Freeman Report, Ben Habib.
Pleasure to be on, James. Good to see you.
Yeah, good to see you, Ben, as well. I'm going to start by that interview that you went on with Jacob Rees-Mogg yesterday, where basically it seems like he invited you or Reform to join the Tories. Tell us about that.
So I was invited to go on GB News with Jacob at top of the hour, and the subject was going to be Unite the Right. And Jacob suggested, perhaps very sensibly from his perspective, suggested that actually, you know, Reform could perhaps somehow join up with the Conservative Party, and we could unite the centre-right, you know, the part of the Conservative Party which believes so strongly, or ostensibly believes so strongly, in an independent, sovereign United Kingdom, lower taxes, promotion of the private sector, aspiration over dependency, wealth creation over wealth redistribution, you know, all these things, these quaint ideas, strong borders and so on, that we used to take for granted, but now seem to be, you know, conspicuous in their absence. And of course, at one level, it's a terrific idea, isn't it? But it's fundamentally flawed as far as the Conservative Party goes, because the Conservative Party, as you and I know better than anyone, possibly, is not conservative. It's not small-t conservative. The majority of the parliamentarians, and indeed the executive in their central office, you know, CCHQ, are basically what they describe themselves as, sort of one nation Tories, which are continuation of the Blair years of a belief in supranational entities being empowered to the detriment of our domestic democracy, and the creation of quangos, so-called independent bodies, which again get empowered without any accountability to the great detriment of our democracy. And there can be no arrangement between Reform UK and the Conservative Party with that one nation group of Tories controlling the parliamentary party and CCHQ. And, you know, one thing I just could quickly say before we finish on this, James, or perhaps you've got other questions, but, you know, Reform UK is not a pressure group for the Conservative Party. We're not a weather vane for the Conservative. We're not their conscience. We're not there to try and make them conservative. We are here because we believe that the country faces great threats, in my view, existential threat, you know, economically, culturally, politically, constitutionally. And we're going to talk about one constitutional item in a moment. But we are in great trouble in the UK. And what Reform UK represents is a 180 degree change of direction from the way that the Conservatives have governed the country and the way that Labour will no doubt govern the country when they win the general election. And so there can be no arrangement when you have a completely diametrically opposite ideological position.
Ben, it's really interesting, isn't it? I mean, we've always known there's a split within the Conservatives. That was apparent during Brexit, wasn't it? But I think it's becoming apparent again. There are a number of Conservatives, Suella Braverman, one of them, on the right side of the party. And it appears to me that if they do get a thumping at this general election, that actually the Conservative Party could split and we could see these politicians on the right, or maybe they take over the party. But I think it's coming, isn't it? Because they're not a Conservative Party anymore, are they?
No, they're definitely not a Conservative Party anymore. And they used to describe themselves, and still do, I think, when they've got the chutzpah to do it, as a broad church. But as you and I know, they're not a broad church. What they are is a divided church with various groupings holding different views of how the country should be governed. But the dominant view is effectively a Liberal Democrat view. The One Nation lot are not Conservative. They're the ones who should leave the party. But they won't. They've got a tight grip on the Conservative Party.
Yeah. And the other interesting thing, of course, before we move on, Ben, is that the portion of the party which is in control at the moment is at odds with the membership as well. It's not what the membership want. Clearly, Rishi Absolutely. Sunak wasn't voted to be Prime Minister, and yet here we are. Ben, I know you're going to roll your eyes when I ask you this, but I've got to ask you because Nigel Farage has posted about this on Facebook in the past week. He posted a story about pollsters saying that if he does stand with Reform in the general election, that they would totally wipe out the Conservatives. And he poses a question. He's asking Facebook users, should he do it? So is he going to stand in the general election, Ben?
Well, I think the fact that Nigel is asking other people for advice is a pretty strong indication that he's not minded to do it. If he felt it, if he felt the need, the calling to come back and help save the United Kingdom, he would just do it. He clearly doesn't feel that calling because he's sitting on the sideline talking about it. But look, I'm not an apologist for Nigel, and nor am I going to have in any way any sort of constructive criticism of Nigel. Nigel needs to speak for Nigel. But as far as Reform UK is concerned, what Richard and I are trying to do is to create a broad and deep political movement, one which will carry on for years. And that can never be centered on one individual. That has to be centered on many people. It's got to be a collective that come together with shared values. And it's that which we wish to create, and that which will then be a sustainable political force. So great, I'd love Nigel to come back. As we know, he's a superb campaigner, can communicate, get the message across arguably better than anyone. But he's got to want to do it. Personally, if I were him, having made the case for Brexit, having known that they didn't deliver Brexit properly — he says properly, I don't think they've delivered Brexit at all, actually, because Northern Ireland's been left behind. We're going to talk about it. And personally, given the state in which the United Kingdom is, facing all these very significant threats, if I were Nigel, I'd be back in. But I'm in, right? So that's my view.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I agree. I think he should stand. I really do think, because I think, you know, Nigel got a lot of criticism in the 2019 general election for leading the party but not standing himself. He did get a lot of criticism. So I think people want Nigel to stand. So Nigel, if you're watching, please do stand in the general election. Now, Ben, we've got a couple of minutes, so we're going to go to the news headlines, and then when we come back, we'll talk about Northern Ireland, because that's what we got you on to speak about. But I do want to talk about the recent election. So Reform is doing very, very well in the polls. There's no denying that. At some points, it's been only 5 percentage points behind the Tories, which is just astonishing, really. Do you think there's a danger, though, because Reform's vote is very, very spread across the country, it doesn't really have that local infrastructure to focus those votes, that it does very well in the polls but doesn't get anybody elected?
I mean, there's always that risk. But if you look, James, at where we were polling 9 months ago, we were polling 5%, and we got, I think, 5.3% in the Tamworth by-election. And then Rupert Lowe, our mutual colleague, got 10% in Kingswood. I got 13% in Wellingborough. And then the Blackpool South by-election, we got 17%. So we've been making staged progress. And if we get above 20%, every percent above 20%, we start getting seats and we get disproportionate number of seats as you go further above 20%. You get more and more seats. So sure, at the moment, if a general election were held and the current levels of polling were replicated in a general election, we wouldn't get seats. But the political wind is in our sails. As we rise, the Conservative Party is dropping. And by the way, it's equally brutal on the way down. As we go above 20% and start getting seats, if they get, you know, as they drop, and they're already actually below 20%, as they drop, they'll be crucified. And that is what's going to, I think, with or without Nigel, the Conservative Party is facing an extinction event. And, you know, and yeah, deservedly so, frankly, after 14 years of misgoverning the United Kingdom.
Yes, and we're going to take that break now. When we come back, we're going to talk about potentially the thing which could break the back of the Conservatives and make that come true, which is their policy on immigration, because we're just about to head into the summer months when the seas are calm across the British Channel. And I think, you know, if we do see record numbers coming across, I mean, we've got higher numbers this year coming across than we did last year. But if those boats keep on coming and this Rwanda policy doesn't materialize and do anything, then I think that is the Tories finished, because it will be in the run-up to that general election vote later this year. Ben, stay where you are. We're going to be right back right after this short break on TNT.
I have some even more exciting news.
TNT Radio News.
Matt Boyland here with a quick look at your TNT headlines. Slovakia's Prime Minister has remarkably survived after being shot multiple times in a politically motivated assassination attempt. US President Joe Biden has agreed to face off against Donald Trump in two televised debates ahead of the presidential election. And the EU has issued an ultimatum to Israel, urging Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu to end his military operation in Rafah or risk damaging relations with the bloc.
Are you enjoying listening to TNT Radio?
Do you think we're doing a good job?
Then please let us know. Why not leave us a like or a positive review or comment on Facebook, Gab, or Getter? Help us get the word out as we cover the biggest topics of our time on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Right now, Ben, this Rwanda policy, there's many of us are very skeptical about whether it's going to work the way it's being implemented anyway. But in the last few days, obviously, we've heard a High Court ruling that it won't apply to Northern Ireland. Please tell us about that. I guess there's a few on the left that are predictably blaming Brexit, which, I think is absolutely ridiculous. But tell us about the policy. And, you know, is this the Rwanda policy in the bin now for the Tories, essentially?
I mean, there's a group of people in our country that would blame Brexit if their milk was off in the morning, having left it out all night on the ledge. No, this has got nothing to do with Brexit. It's got everything to do with the deal that Boris Johnson signed with the European Union. Part of that deal was the Northern Ireland Protocol, which you'll know, James, I've been fighting, since it was revealed. Actually, I've been fighting against it. Because what that protocol did was to subject Northern Ireland to hundreds, if not thousands, of EU regulations and laws, effectively taking Northern Ireland out of the United Kingdom. And there are many people, and I'm not one of them, and you're not one of them, but there are many people in the UK who probably didn't care about it. People like Julia Hartley Brewer, for example, said Northern Ireland would be a price worth paying for Brexit. But it was never a price worth paying for Brexit, even from an English nationalist perspective, if that's where your mind is, because it was more than just a grappling. It was more than just removing Northern Ireland. It was a grappling hook into the flesh of the United Kingdom, including Great Britain, England, Scotland, and Wales. It was a grappling hook into our flesh. And what we've seen with this High Court ruling in the last couple of days, I think it was a few days ago now, is the effect of that grappling hook. So what the High Court ruled was that the Northern Ireland Protocol prohibits under EU human rights law, not the European Convention of Human Rights, under EU human rights law, which Northern Ireland is subject to through the protocol, it prohibits the certain aspects of the Illegal Migration Act, which Suella Braverman championed and put in place just before she was booted out as Home Secretary. And that undermines Rwanda as far as Northern Ireland is concerned. And what that means in turn, of course, is that the Rwanda plan can't work nationwide, because if you're an illegal migrant in the United Kingdom, you just go straight to Belfast to avoid British courts from being able to take you out of the country. So even if the Rwanda plan were to work, and I don't think it ever will, but even if it were to work, there would be a get out of jail card for every illegal migrant in the UK. They would merely have to take a ferry from Holyhead to Belfast, and that's it. They're safe. And by the way, so would all the illegal migrants in the Republic of Ireland go to Belfast. What's happened here is that Belfast, Northern Ireland, is going to become the repository of all illegal migrants in the British Isles. I mean, you couldn't have a more ridiculous situation. And what it proves, actually, James, what it proves is that a country must not mess with its borders. It took thousands of years to establish our borders the way they've been established. They were established for good reason. It's to protect civil society in our country, to make sure that we work as one economic, political, and constitutional unit. The minute you start messing around with borders the way this Conservative government has messed around with them, you undermine the territorial integrity of the United Kingdom. You undermine the rule of law in the United Kingdom. And that's what we're seeing. We're turning into a basket case because of that deal.
And what do you think, Ben? I find it absolutely ironic. Well, two things ironic about all of this. Firstly, that the EU is now complaining about, migrants going from Northern Ireland, well, from England to Northern Ireland and then to Ireland. Whilst France is fine if they come from France to the UK, that's fine. But also there's a poll out in Ireland, and it seems that more than 50% of the Irish public now want checkpoints at the border, Ben.
I'm sure they do. And again, it testifies to the fact that I just mentioned that countries need borders. You need a border. It is supremely uncivilized not to have a border, because you expose your civil society to the kind of threat that the Republic is now awake to. They've had real problems in the Republic, greater problems than we've had in England. And they've had civil unrest as a result of illegal migrants attacking members of their populace. Now, it is incumbent on a government to protect its people. That's a fundamental duty of any government, to protect its people. But by taking the approach on open borders that the EU has taken, let's not forget the entire European Union, the entire Schengen zone has no borders. It is an absolutely ludicrous position. In the pursuit of students who don't want to show their passport in order to go to Rome for a weekend, they've given up on national security. It is an absurdity. And the Republic are waking up to the fact that, oh my goodness, borders are a good thing. They protect you from the kind of assault, from which we need protection. And we need to wake up to it. We need to become much more robust in our border enforcement. We've got to recognize that border control is a physical process. It's not a legal one. It doesn't come out of deportation schemes. It doesn't come out of new domestic legislation. It comes out of border force or the Royal Navy or a specialized, dedicated force designed to do it, policing our borders and refusing entry to anyone seeking to enter our country illegally. It's as simple as that.
Yeah, I find it totally ironic, given that the border was weaponized as part of the Brexit negotiations, that now Ireland is calling for the border infrastructure to go back up. Now, Ben, Reform UK, what's their policy? How are they going to solve this problem of the boats coming across?
So we would, like the Belgians did, develop a dedicated force that would patrol the channel, supported by special drones, sensors, fast-moving boats, equipped in every way that they need to be equipped in order to identify and then intercept boats seeking to enter our territorial waters from France, require them to go back to France. If they don't go back to France of their own volition, take them back to France. And that's it. It's simple.
And what about the migrants that are already here? We've got, it's around 70,000 coming across every year. I'm sure that the numbers are undercounted as well, because there's lots that Absolutely. Come across in boats and they never get counted. What's Reforms UK's policy on them?
So a couple of things. They do need to have, they need to go through the asylum process. That process needs to be significantly more stringent than the one we have at the moment. I'm sure you're aware, but listeners may not be, that actually we've been taking a very lax approach to asylum applications. The officers in charge of the process have been told not to quiz asylum seekers too comprehensively if they feel that they're being lied to, because they may upset people who've come from difficult situations. Remember, these people are coming from France. They're not escaping war-torn countries. As much as we might have our own views on France, it's not a war-torn country without human rights. And so we need a much more rigorous asylum application process where people are thoroughly grilled. And we need to do whatever is necessary to ensure that we have the law in this country to deport them either to the country from which they came or put them on a boat and send them back to France. The way that the Irish wish to send migrants back to the UK. Yeah.
Yeah, sure. And finally, Ben, would Reform UK take the UK out of the ECHR?
So there are two things on the ECHR. There's the convention, of which it's actually academic whether we stay a member or not. But the really crucial thing, James, is that we remove the European Court of Human Rights, which is the court that adjudicates the convention, as being the supreme judicial body in the United Kingdom. Tony Blair, for reasons only known to Tony Blair, though we can all guess what they were, put the European Court of Human Rights in above our own Supreme Court as the ultimate arbiter of human rights in our country. He therefore empowered a foreign court, which is entirely unaccountable to the British public, to make decisions on a human rights basis, which, by the way, is a breach of Article 21 of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights that requires that people should be governed democratically. We have an undemocratic court in charge of British human rights legislation. We need to take that court out. It needs to be removed. The Human Rights Act of 1998 needs to be varied to remove the European Court of Human Rights as the supreme judicial body in the UK. And actually, we can leave the convention too. It's a waste of time. It's not doing its job anymore.
Thank you so much for joining me on the Freeman Report. Deputy Leader of Reform UK, Ben Habib. Thank you very much, Ben. Thank you.
Thank you.
Right. Okay. We're going to take a short break now. And when we come back, I'm going to be speaking with Dr. Martin Cohen. I'm going to be asking if the world order, the rules-based system that we kept on being told we've been following since the Second World War, if it's still in existence. And if it's not, then what rules-based system are we following? So stay put right where you are for that conversation right here on TNT in a moment.
As a combat wounded veteran, I know how hard it is to come home and build a meaningful life. When I was in Iraq, our vehicle was hit. A rocket-propelled grenade exploded right under my seat. Traumatic brain injury, a fractured pelvis, severe burns. They didn't think I was going to make it. I had to learn to walk again and live with the scars, both visible and invisible.
DAV helps veterans like Latoya get the benefits they've earned. They help more than a million veterans every year in life-changing ways.
With DAV on my side, I was able to pursue my dreams. If my story can touch a heart, it can change a life. My victory is overcoming my wounds so I can help other veterans.
Latoya Lucas, may your victories inspire many more. Support more victories for veterans. Go to DAV.org.
She used to dance and dream of a better life, a brighter future. Today, thanks to Children International and friends like you, she dances for the world. Together, we give children in poverty a chance to set their sights high and achieve their dreams. Learn more about Children International and join us in our life-changing work at children.org today.
The Freeman Report on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Right, okay. For as long as I've been alive, I've always understood and been told that we follow a rules-based system that was set up after the Second World War. But is that system still in place? Because the world seems fairly chaotic at the moment, and I can't see any rules-based system that we seem to be following. So I'm delighted to be having that conversation with my next guest. He is Dr. Martin Cohen. He's an author and philosopher. Welcome to the Freeman Report, Martin.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So, Martin, is there such a thing as a world based set of rules now that we follow, or has all of that just gone?
Well, I think the thing is that after the Second World War, there really was a sense of which there couldn't be a Third World War, because it would simply be the end of all wars. We would have, our ability to destroy things has increased exponentially. Obviously, the atom bomb is one, but we've seen in Gaza and in Ukraine that just these huge bombs, the technology, it's very easy to destroy in a way that is new in human history. So after the Second World War, quite rightly, people said we need to change the rules. In fact, we need to have rules that we're all going to sign up for. And the rules basically were no taking territory by force. Within countries, you had to all the citizens had to be treated equally. And that's important, because if we take Israel, we've got a very, very cruel system where half the population, approximately half, actually have no rights. The Palestinians have no rights. They're not allowed to vote. They are treated as permanently there, but not supposed to be there. They're supposed to be in other countries. And this is the process we're seeing at the moment, where the people in Gaza, who are obviously born there, they have every reason to think that they live there, are being told, no, you must go, you must cross the border to Egypt.
So would you agree with me? I mean, I think that world, if it ever really did exist, which I think it probably did, that world-based rule system, would you say that it's gone now? It just doesn't exist. Would you agree with me on that?
I wouldn't go that far because, you see, I think we can probably all remember all the things that went on when we were a bit younger. Like in South America, there were terrible things. The Americans were behind a lot of this. There was one particular incident in, I think it was El Salvador, where the Americans enabled these kind of extreme right forces, I think they're called Contras or something, to conduct massacres of people like nuns, Christian nuns. And it was so hypocritical. The vast amount of suffering in South America, but yet you can see South America today has settled down, and it is a kind of functioning system. You don't have wars going on between the countries. So, yes, things seem to go very badly at the moment, but I wouldn't go as far as to say the system has completely collapsed. What is at risk, I think, is that people walk sort of complacently into new conflicts. We had this strange sort of mock battle between Iran and Israel, where the Israelis blew up an Iranian embassy, which is, of course, completely against all the rules. And the Israelis retaliated, but they did it in a choreographed way. They said, we will be sending drones, and they did, and the drones took an hour to arrive. And they didn't do much because they were all shot down. But it was that kind of a thing. People said, well, this could escalate. It could turn into a full-scale missile-to-missile, possibly even nuclear weapons could have been used in the Middle East. If the Israelis used their nuclear weapons, then you would think that the other Arab countries would get involved. If other Arab countries get involved, probably you end up with a superpower conflict in due course. So it's sort of possible. We've been very near in the last few months to see how things could spill over.
Yeah, and what do you make? Because I think partly the reason the world order that we've been following since the Second World War is now under threat is because of it's the multipolar vision of the world, isn't it? It's the BRICS countries rising. America is, it still is, I think, a superpower, but its power is diminishing. The dollar, for example, is under threat. The BRICS countries are talking about using other currencies instead of the dollar for trading commodities, which is why America is a superpower in the first place. What do you make of this position in history that we are now?
Yeah, well, I think what you're arguing is the traditional view, in a way. It is that economics is running government policy. And this is something that I think, unfortunately, economics in a way is rational. So that, yes, America actually is the most powerful country in the world for two reasons. One is it has this huge military budget and very sophisticated weapons. But the other reason, which I think is more important, is that it is the economic superpower. And the thing that has shifted here is, as you mentioned, it is the rise of China, one of the BRICS, the big country, who simply by the number of people in it has this economic power. I was reading an article about electric cars, and the Americans, you see, it's interesting to see this, again, the rules of the post-war order, they have simply tried to shut out Chinese electric cars because they're a fraction of the price of American ones. But they can't actually stop other countries around the world buying Chinese electric cars. And they certainly can't stop the Chinese buying them. And the Chinese have become this huge market. So there is this sense in which America continues to behave like it has total control over things. Militarily, it probably does, but except in terms of things like a superpower conflict. But in terms of like small countries, America, what America says goes. But in terms of economics, it has shifted, I think.
Yeah, and obviously the military, the reason it's got that military, large military budget is because the dollar is the reserve world currency, and the fact that that makes America, the economy, gives that superpower status to the Americans. How dangerous a period do you think we're going into now as that power diminishes? And I guess the world order that we've seen for the last 70, 80 years starts to come undone, really, doesn't it?
My theory is that what's happened is actually countries have ceased to follow economic interests. It sounds bad to always just follow your economic interest, but it is at least rational. And what I think is happening now is there is actually a tendency to follow irrational policies. And Israel is the case in point. Israel, for 80 years, has got away with really something quite disgraceful, which is squatting on land that doesn't belong to it and treating 2 million Palestinians in the most appalling way. It's got away with it. But now it's pursuing a policy which is actually turning all the countries of the world against it. Some countries have actually closed their markets. I think Turkey was doing this. It's severed links that have taken 50 years to build up in a few months. No one, I think, actually thinks what Israel is doing is in Israelis' interest. So there's a large amount of Jewish people who are opposed. And Israel, despite everything we read about it, is quite a clever society, and there's a proper discussion goes on. I get my information on Israel from Israeli newspapers. That shows you that there is still a kind of democracy functioning there. There are the proper journalists and the proper reports. They know what's going on. What is going on is a small clique, a political clique, are preserving their own interests at the expense of the country and, of course, at the expense of the Palestinians. And this is what I think is also going.
I've had Ofer Kassif on this show many times before. He's a member of the Knesset in Israel. And that's exactly, I mean, he was actually banned from the Knesset for, I forget, it was 30, 40 days, something like that, because they said he was speaking out against Israel and calling for a ceasefire. He says, I'm speaking up for Israel because this, this conflict with the Palestinians, there is no winner from this. There are only losers. And so he believes he's actually speaking in Israel's interest by calling for a ceasefire, just as you kind of alluded to there. Now, let's stay with this this policy or this conflict in Israel. The UK obviously has quite a long global reach, but it is a relatively small country. many in the country would like to see a much more ethical foreign policy. Do you think that's even possible, you know, with the very powerful allies that the UK has, the US, in Israel? Is it even possible for politicians here to implement some kind of ethical policy?
I'm sure it's possible. I think the problem really is that the one that I was alluding to before is our governments are not really influenced by the voters or the people. If we take Israel, for example, I'm sure there's probably 60% of people, if not more, are totally opposed to the current administration and its policies. And the people who support it are probably only about 15%. There's this far-right extreme fundamentalist group, people like, I think it's the Minister for Finance, who used the most inflammatory rhetoric about pushing all the Palestinians out and treating them, in his terms, as animals. But most people in Israel are have a different view. But the point is that
I was going to say, Martin, and I was going to say, yes, I absolutely agree with you that. And my point is that, in a democracy, I guess the population then, those 60% or whatever, because the polls do show that the majority of the British public are against the bombing of innocent civilians in Gaza. They would like to see a ceasefire. But the problem we've got is because of these foreign globalist entities and how the reach and power they have over the UK is basically the two main parties, which are the only two parties which have a realistic chance of forming a government in the UK, essentially have the same policy, don't they?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's what we might call the democratic deficit. It applies everywhere. So that you've got a sort of sham democracies. I mean, you take Russia. Yeah. President Putin is always elected with 80 or 90% support. But is that a real measure of support? And after all, it all depends on whether the media is free and whether there are the academics are able to research things. we saw in America, to take a different example, the New York Times was actually shown up as being very much in the side, in under the influence of the CIA. It was ringing up, the journalist in it was ringing up the CIA to check stories, and the stories that were being published were disgraceful. They were all false. They were sort of atrocity stories about Israel and Gaza. But stop talking Israel and Gaza. I mean, the problem is, well, if we go back to where I am now, I'm in France, we have a system that has broken down. It used to be a kind of system where you had a left party and a conservative or right party. Lots of countries have seen this. The left has actually disappeared. It's a curious thing. It wasn't destroyed by force. It just sort of imploded.
Yeah, and Martin, this just gets to the heart of my question to you. Is it possible, given these global influences, for the UK to have a foreign, ethical foreign policy? Because, like I said, you know, it's all very well if the British public might want that, but if you've got these global entities that have great influence over the UK, then we don't get a choice. Our democracy doesn't give us that choice.
I think the UK in certain areas has got power and influence. If it's something like Ukraine, which I know TNT has a slightly different view on to me, but the UK has actually committed quite a lot of resources towards supporting the Ukrainian government, largely with public support there. But then you look at other policies that the UK is also supporting, as it's supporting Israel and sending weapons to Israel. Now, that is not with public support. So I would say the UK is able to do things still. The question is, how do the public get any control?
We've only got a minute left, and I'd love to hear your view on this, because, like you said, it's not TNT, because I have my own view, and TNT doesn't tell me how to think. But do you think Zelensky is a good leader that we should support?
I don't particularly like any individual like this, but I certainly think it's a case of a small country being attacked by a big country. And that goes back to the post-world order. That was supposed to be...
Do you not think that what Russia is basically... it's a little bit like if, I guess, Canada made friends with Russia and Russia wanted to put its weapons and start business in Canada. What do you think the US would do? Do you not think Russia's been provoked?
I don't think so. No, I think the scenario is that Russia was felt threatened by Ukraine is rather implausible. You might say, take Lithuania, which joined NATO. Lithuania used to be part of the Russian sector. And
I'm really sorry, Martin, we have run out of time. It's probably a little bit unfair of me to ask you that question with only a minute left. But listen, thank you very much, Dr. Martin Cohen. Thank you for joining me on the Freeman Report. Right.